It's a pleasure. Welcome to the show. Now, if you haven't had a chance to meet her or watch her to this point, you'll have that opportunity. We suggest that you do, and we'll make sure she visits here frequently as well. But you can catch her now on WGNO television, on WNOL at times as well, depending on the shows that take place with sports, with those fine entities. And she's new, but not exactly new, fairly new to our town, certainly not new to our state. It's a pleasure to welcome Jory Parrish to the show. Jory, it's glad to have you with us. Welcome.
Hey, thanks so much. It's an honor to be here.
Well, listen, first and foremost, since it's the first time we've had you on, and my apologies for you having to put up with my buddy Ed all the time, but you know, listen, somebody's got to do it. So I do apologize to you, but he raves about you and loves the work that you do, and he's really happy to have you on board. But why don't you tell everybody, first of all, about your own background, where you've come from and what you've done previously, so that people get a chance to meet you.
Hey, I really do appreciate it. And Ed's fantastic. I love being in that office with him. It's an honor. But yeah, so as you mentioned, not new to the state, been in Shreveport for the last 2.5 years, covering a little bit of East Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas. So just fell in love with culture down here and everything that comes along with sports and how intense it is and how much people really treat it as a religion. Like, it's a privilege. And as soon as I saw the opportunity here in New Orleans, it was something I jumped at. And honestly, it's awesome to be in the Crescent City and got to experience the normalcy of it there for about a month. But, you know, I'm just really happy to be here and blessed to be talking about all things New Orleans sports.
Yeah, a lot of friends in Shreveport, and I get up there quite a bit. And you know, Kelly Wells with the Shreveport Bossier Sports Foundation is a very close friend, and of course a lot of the journalists up there, both in television and in print, that I'm very good friends with as well. So very familiar with the area and with your work too, having followed you there. Now, before you got into this, talk about your background prior to getting into this sports journalism aspect of your life.
Sure, so just a little bit. I went to the University of Illinois. I am from Chicago. I'm a Midwesterner. I played a little bit of arena football, actually. I was a tight end and a center for an arena team there in Chicago. I cheered at the University of Illinois, so a little bit of an athletic background. Grew up with an athletic family. Was a little bit of a singer at one point as well, so in my free time, I love to just play guitar, play piano, and sing. And, you know, sports have always been my number one passion growing up in a sports household, and just kind of all went from there after I started playing and dabbling in a few things and picked up a mic, broadcasting mic, that is, in college for the first time, just being able to cover Illinois sports, and kind of led my way down to the South and wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, a good friend of mine is a guy that I helped in the business, and I brought him here to work with me when I was doing play-by-play for the New Orleans Zephyrs. He went to Illinois and served as play-by-play man there, Brian Barnhart, who's a great friend of mine, and he's, you know, of course, loved his time with the Illini. And, of course, with your background, that's why I wanted you to talk about it, because it's unique in the fact that you actually played the game prior to getting into this. Now, if you're talking about a male, that's commonplace, right? We see it all the time. It's a natural progression. But we don't see it so much from a female perspective, having played football, certainly with basketball, softball, volleyball, whatever, but not with football. That's unique, and I think it gives you a unique perspective, doesn't it?
Well, I'll tell you, too. Playing in my time, because I started playing that in college, it really did help just have a better understanding of the sport and learning the X's and O's and a playbook. We had like over 70 plays in my time there, and I was on the line playing a little bit of like a guard, you know, tight end kind of hybrid, because it was 7-on-7. So learned a lot of different aspects of what it meant to run an offense, to line up, and to play, and to get a better appreciation for what the guys up front do, you know. So I loved it, though. I can't tell you how much I do miss it. And every time there's a football around, maybe if I'm at a game or something, and it might come my direction, I love to throw it. And people are like, you know, for some reason they think it's the coolest thing in the world that I can throw a spiral. But I don't know.
It's all good. Jory Parrish with us from WGNO. And I did the play-by-play for both versions of arena football here in New Orleans, for the New Orleans Night and then the New Orleans Voodoo most recently. And, in fact, your buddy Ed was my color analyst for the New Orleans Night initially back in the early 1990s. So we indoctrinated him to arena football and kind of taught him the ins and outs. And when he first showed up, he kind of wondered, what in the hell am I getting into? And then all of a sudden he figured out, you know, hey, this is really fun. It's a good game. Really enjoyed it. And I'm sorry that it's gone now, frankly, from the AFL anyway.
I agree. Yeah, for sure. I know, you know, the league being a few of those leagues, not being around for a few years is unfortunate. And, you know, I kind of saw that maybe turn into the AAF or the XFL and other leagues that kind of followed. But, you know, I hope we see something like that come back. It was unfortunate to see even the XFL recently, you know, say that they're not going to do things for the next year. So, I mean, people can't get enough football, right? So as much as we can, let's make it happen.
Exactly. All right, Jerry, let's lean on your journalistic side now. Saints are poised to bring in Jameis Winston, and talked about it with Mike Triplett previously on the show, but I feel first and foremost that it's a no-brainer because there's no risk here. You're bringing in a guy to be an insurance policy. You're not bringing in a guy to be your guy. Last year when the Saints flirted with, albeit briefly, Antonio Brown, I was against that, and most people were for obvious reasons, because you're talking about a guy that not only has had a lot of issues on and off the field, but a guy that was going to have to be counted on to be a main guy on your team immediately. That's not what you're talking about with Winston. You're talking about a backup quarterback who's had enormous time in the league. He's had some success. He has a lot of talent. And therefore, from a playing perspective, there's no downside to this, is there?
No, not at all, especially even for Jameis Winston and the Saints. But Sean Payton, you know, coming into the draft, even talked about the importance of having three quarterbacks in the room. And he really did. Jameis would be a perfect just kind of come in and fill the role that Teddy did. Also kind of fun to mention that they're the exact same age, you know, when Teddy came in as a backup and Jameis is 26, kind of that same age. But, yeah, I think they're similar kind of in that way. And we saw how important it was for the Saints to have a backup quarterback that can be a starter in the league. You know, Teddy came in and he didn't miss a beat last year, and that was huge for the team. And obviously with Drew's time being so valuable, it doesn't hurt to have a guy that can step in and still be that kind of a leader for a team that really everywhere else is a good football team. It's a well-rounded football team. So it's huge to have that kind of a backup quarterback in the room.
Sure. I think they really liked having that quarterback room they've had the last 2 years, which has been the best in the NFL, hands down, with the three guys they had. So I think that was already in place. They saw that, how successful it was. So the brain trust has seen it. They've seen it in action. Therefore, there's no risk. Now, the bigger question would be down the road, could he be your guy? The answer is yes. Will he be your guy? The answer is I don't know. You can give your opinion on that. And therein lies the rub, because if he is your guy, there's all the interceptions, 88. There's all the fumbles, 50. There's the inconsistency on the field. And then there's the pattern of behavior off the field. You're a woman. You can certainly appreciate and speak to it when you've had not one, not two, but three incidents, including standing on a table at Florida State and yelling out extreme vulgarity at a woman that got him suspended for a game there. And then, of course, the alleged sexual assault at Florida State, which was settled. He was not found guilty or prosecuted in that particular instance. And then, of course, most recently with the Uber driver, and the NFL suspended him for three games because they found substantive evidence that something did occur there. Would that concern you to entrust your team to somebody that's had those kind of issues? My opinion is that I'm a big believer in second chances. Always have been. Lord knows I need one and have needed them, and you probably do too. But when you're talking about a pattern of behavior, that has to be a bit of concern, doesn't it?
Sure, and I mean, teams even say that when they're looking to draft players coming out of college, they look at their track records and what kind of a person you're getting. That's huge. You know, and your past doesn't go away necessarily, but like you said, it's just a matter of giving somebody an opportunity to maybe show something different. And in terms of whether or not he's going to be maybe Drew Brees' successor, Sean Payton and Drew Brees have talked so highly about Taysom Hill and him coming in and kind of being Drew Brees' heir apparent potentially. And with Jameis coming in, that does kind of raise questions as to what kind of a role Taysom Hill might see. I think we can definitely expect him with this two-year deal that he just signed to be taking significantly more snaps at the quarterback position, knowing what we know about the opinions of him from some of those guys. And I think that's going to be what's even more interesting is how are they going to utilize Taysom this upcoming season, and knowing, like I said, how highly they think of him, and with Jameis coming in as being that maybe solid backup role.
With regard to the Saints draft, of course, only four players, the fewest they've drafted since 2009, and the continual progression, the consistency of what they do is so obvious. It shouldn't be a very hard puzzle to solve when we always try to analyze this before it happens, because they do a lot of the same things. They've now traded up 20 times in this regime since 2006. And they love to invest in big men. All you need to do is look at their offensive and defensive lines. On the defensive side, you've got number one picks in Cam Jordan, Sheldon Rankins, and Marcus Davenport. On the offensive side, you have number one picks in Ryan Ramczyk. You've got now, of course, a number one pick in Cesar Ruiz, and you got a number one pick in Andres Pete. So they have heavily invested, building inside out. This is what they do, and they always trade up to get their man. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Saints absolutely have just invested in the trenches and drafts. And the thing about this is it might seem like a mystery maybe to some fans that saw a center go after last year. You know, the Saints, of course, drafted Eric McCoy. But Sean Payton told us, you know, the first thing that came out of his mouth when he spoke to the media on a phone conference just addressing the Saints' needs this year, he said, look, we're really looking at interior offensive linemen. So, and Cesar Ruiz, I mean, when they picked him, he was certainly – best player in his position, maybe on the board, and just a really dependable guy. No holding calls against this guy, just consistent. And when you talk about, you know, again, the value of Drew Brees and his career and what he's looking at and how open and honest he's been to his approach each and every offseason, I mean, the need is going to be to protect him and to keep him, you know, in a position to where he's not getting, you know, blown up or injured. So, yeah, I don't think that it's maybe as much of a surprise. And I think the Saints did great in this draft. I think the draft class is a lot of really good players that could come in and maybe try to make an impact here. So we'll see how their talent translates into the NFL.
Yeah, I liked what they did. Look, NFL drafts are always defined by if you get two starters in any draft, you've had a good draft. If you get three starters, you've had a superb draft. The Saints, I think, unquestionably got two starters. Bond's going to be a starter eventually, if not immediately, and clearly, Ruiz is going to be a starter from the get-go, it would appear, with McCoy moving to guard. And with regard to Trautman, and they traded all the picks to get him, they just saw value there. They had a guy ranked in the second round that they were able to trade up and get. That's a big target. That is a good catch radius that catches the ball and that can separate a little bit. And that also, as Sean Payton said, he can block. So they felt like they got a guy there that really will mitigate their perceived lack of weapons in the receiving game. They added Emmanuel Sanders to go with Michael Thomas, and then you throw Kamara in there, and now you've got Cook and Trautman if he pans out, and now you've got that skill set that you really are looking for, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I really liked that Dayton's head coach had to say about Trautman was just how much growth that he's seen him make in his career. So each and every year he's just gotten better and better, and he just had a lot of really good things to say about him. So I know a lot of drafts were surprised to see him even still available, and I think the Saints making the trade and being aggressive about getting those guys in the third round just speaks a lot to the players that they thought that they were getting. And, yeah, I think, again, they did a good job, and it was a good draft for the Saints this year.
Well, you were getting here right when things are getting exciting in the NBA season with the Pelicans, and alas, it got interrupted rudely. And we don't know what's going to happen now. I mean, are they going to resume the season? I don't know. Or will they just go straight to the playoffs? Who knows if they resume at all? It's kind of a shame because this was an exciting young team that was really starting to figure it out, play well together with a good future.
And it doesn't help maybe that you look at the Pelicans' schedule, kind of, you know, if nothing had happened, it looked favorable for them moving forward. And like you said, really just a team that was starting to feel that vibe and that gel and just a lot of talent on that team. But who's to say? It looks like if the league does come back, it most likely might lean towards the direction of going right into the playoffs. Now, I have no say in that, but it sounds like with the caution that's going into starting back up and what that would look like, and rightfully so. Obviously, these are very unprecedented times, but yeah, it's just a crazy world right now that we're living in. But it sounds like for sure the NBA is doing everything they can to be very, very smart about their next move.
College football is so prevalent in this country, but as you have already discovered, it's crazy down here. I mean, people live and die in these parts, and LSU had an unprecedented season this past year. I cannot envision not having a college football season. Number one, college football supports every other sport at all these respective schools, and that's a fact from a budgetary perspective. So it's unbelievably important monetarily to these schools and their athletic programs. And My fear is if you don't have college football with fans, there's a real chance that some schools will use that as a reason or even an excuse to cut other sports. That really concerns me, both on the male and female side of intercollegiate athletics.
For sure. And, I mean, you know, you speak economically and financially about what that would possibly do. But also just it's so hard to predict the future in this instance. But football means so much to people, more than even just the financial aspect of it. I mean, if we're talking socially, it's how everybody comes together. And I think one of the things that isn't being maybe brought to light so much, even with what we've learned about being in quarantine, is the mental, emotional aspect of staying healthy, right? And we've seen, I mean, the NFL draft alone was such a huge distraction this last weekend. And, you know, how many people came together. They had record ratings. And that just goes to show you how often and how important it is for people to lean on sports. So as much as, yes, financially it would just cause a whole other sense of disarray. We need sports. So it's tough. But I can't imagine. We're talking still months down the road, and it sounds like things are getting better. We're in the right direction here. I can't imagine there not being a college football season.